So
got it.
Blog
got
Talk
it.
Radio.
Boop. Up. Heep. Oh, good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. We're wrapping up some hilarious hijinks this weekend. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with...
Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And chiming in along with us is...
This is CW, keeping these pranksters in line, as always.
Good luck.
Yeah. Got your hands full tonight, young lady.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Real nice story from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Is that right? Starring Hans Conried?
Yeah, he's kind of the narrator throughout this, and he acts as the sheriff in there. Usually he's a lot over-the-top character. He's a little more under the top in this one, but it is indeed Hans Conried. The only one I know that starred in both some episodes of the Mystery Theater and at least one episode of the Mutual Radio Theater as well.
And hey to good old Bob in the chat room.
Hi, Bob. Hi. And some fun, and then maybe we'll talk about some more pranks and practical jokes, like we touched on a bit yesterday.
Absolutely.
While we enjoy this great radio program.
Yeah, and to re-celebrate the return of Gar the Ghoul.
Ah, yes.
Yes. He was doing well on three cups of coffee last night, so.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was April 1st. And it was April 1st. Irony? I think not.
It's always a different show when Brother Gar is here. That is for sure.
Oh, he's glad when he's feeling better. That's always nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
I don't know. Some people can conquer those migraines. They say the caffeine and a good cup of coffee sometimes can actually help, depending upon the individual, of course.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess caffeine is a big part of fighting off migraines. But he seems to get hit with them here and there, and it could be from some of his experiences that he's had in the not that our armed forces would like experiment on our own people or anything, but
no, we all know that being exposed to an A-bomb that's full of vitamins and minerals just nummy
it gives you that glow.
It gives you that inner and outer glow. You know, you literally light up a room as you enter.
Yes. That's right. Try neutrino flakes.
Yes. And now, new and improved HBOMB. Yes. With that extra. Yes. Sparkle tang of uranium and strontium. Mm-hmm. That's
and
good.
You're going to shop where you... I have to shop where you guys shop. All I get is sugar frosted stupid flakes.
Oh, yeah. Our store... I remember buying Christmas gifts for my son. His Mr. Fission kit. That was fun.
Yeah.
His Mr. Fission kit.
Oh, yeah. I got the... make your own Manhattan Project.
There you go. Always fun times. And tonight's going to be a blast as well with this story from CBS Radio Mystery Theater called The Transformation of Joby?
Of Joby, yeah. His name was Joby something or other, but everyone knew him as Joby.
All right. And
that's kind of how that works.
Joby pranked.
Any other voices of note besides Hans tonight on this program?
I'm not sure if you recognize it except from other Mystery Theaters. Joe Silver has this real deep, deep voice, and he's Joby in this particular episode. As far as other voices on here, as it comes back up around, of course, Brenda Rayburn and Ian Martin, and written by the guy who wrote more mystery theaters than anyone else, the one and only Sam Dan. So he wrote an amazing number. He wrote 311 scripts for the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Yikes.
Wow.
Yikes. That's almost a fifth of them or something like that. A fifth or a sixth of them.
Something like that. And
that's quite a few.
That's quite a few. Yeah.
You probably burned through a few typewriters on that one. Typewriters, remember those? Those were really just manual printers.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Clack, clack. I had one of those old steel monsters that I first started learning how to type on. We had one of those, you know, like you could kill someone in misery with that type. They were heavy. And I mean, you had to really clack on those keys to get them to hit the ribbon hard enough to make your word legible.
I'm surprised more people didn't get carpal tunnel back then than they do now.
Yeah, that's surprising. I wonder why.
Of course,
maybe
they didn't do it 24/7.
It could be you had to strike the keys so hard that it was exercise for the fingers, and the repetition was not quite the same as lightly tapping on a keyboard for a word processing unit or whatever. So
I think kids' hands were tougher back then because they had nuns with rulers.
Okay.
You see. So
you seem
I
to
mean,
speak from experience there, Dale.
Yeah, that sounds
no,
like
I
a
actually I was raised by nuns and I have no complaints. They were very nice to I always have fond memory of nuns.
Unlike the Blues Brothers were raised by the Penguin.
Yeah, kind of like that. Although I never had any of them that I feared. They were all nice to me. They were all nice. And I went to catechism, but not a Catholic school. And then I got out of the cult later on.
So,
I escaped.
There you go.
Oh, I know why. Because you introduced them. I have a talkie Tina doll. So you better be nice to me.
Exactly. That'll send a priest flying out of the confessional.
Or perhaps, when you saw the omen, told him, hey, you know, I can do that too.
Yes.
Want me to show you?
Yeah, or spin my head around. Nah, but this story might not spin your head around. I think you'll enjoy it. The transformation of Joby. We might as well get right into it with part one. And this one was originally broadcast and numbered.
Episode number 455 from March 25th of 1976.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents...
Oh, that's Sweet 16 back then.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall, Chamberlain to this curious court of the mysterious and the macabre. There's a certain species of alleged human beings that delights in the practice of the practical joke. In ancient days, this was a rather hazardous pastime. It was said the immortal gods frowned on jokers because they considered the practical joke something that only they themselves had the right to play. In a way, they may have been correct, since it can be argued that the gift of life itself was the greatest practical joke the gods ever played on mankind.
Maybe you'll stop making fun of me now, in that knowing way of yours, your little patronizing airs.
When did I ever patronize you?
Oh, when I shop for antiques.
Well, dear, you're very naive in certain areas.
Am I? Well, how do you account for this letter? Here. Dear Mrs. Tatum, we understand you recently bought a platter at a flea market. It has been identified as a genuine geranium heirloom. It is worth $50,000.
What are you saying?
And all I paid was $1.
Our mystery drama, The Transformation of Joe B., written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Hans Conried. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and True Value Hardware Stores. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
You know, I just thought of something.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, over 250,000 people have already bought 1976 Buicks.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, if you got all those people together, they'd probably disagree on nearly everything. Religion, politics, sports. I mean, people disagree on all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet all those people, over 250,000 of them, agree on Buicks. I think that's really socially significant, don't you?
No.
Buick. Dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals His Word. Throughout time, God has spoken to man in dreams. Jehovah said in the Old Testament, "Listen to my words. If a man be a prophet, I make myself known to him in visions. I speak to him in dreams." So, pay attention to your own dreams. They might well reveal flashes of the future, predictions and warnings of things to come. They may give you a glimpse of God's guidance to lead you back to the peace and security of His way. For your free booklet on dreams, write to the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's The Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Let me have men about me that are fat, and such as sleep nights. Yon Cassius hath a lean and hungry look. Such men are dangerous. So, the fat men have become the good guys, and the skinny ones are the bad guys, just because William Shakespeare said so. But with all due respect to the immortal bard, where are the facts? Where is the body of evidence to prove that the fats are less treacherous than the leans? We're about to regale you with the tale of a jolly fat man named Joseph B. Jefferson.
Joseph B. Jefferson. No one knew him better than I did. And looking back on it, I see I didn't know him very well at all. Folks called him Joe B. He didn't sleep at night much either. How could he? He was forever thinking up little tricks to play on people. Little harmless tricks. Like he'd shake hands with you. In his palm, he'd have this thing concealed that'd scare you out of your wits. But he didn't mean no harm. And like he'd offer a fella a cigar. And when the fella'd light up, and the cigar'd explode. Well, there'd be such a comical look on that fella's face, you couldn't help but laugh. And although Joe B. was big, 6'3", weighed 300, he could move real quick and quiet. Why, he could just slither up unseen to a person, and in less than a minute, that person'd be hopping up and down like a Zuni Indian doing a rain dance. Joe B.'d slipped him a hot foot, you see. But Joe B. reserved his funniest jokes for Will Tatum. Will's a quiet sort. He's educated, been to college and all, but well, he really ain't smart. Don't have much ambition, satisfied to be a bookkeeper down to the mill. Still and all, Will did marry Martha Drake. The fact is, Martha did choose him over Joe B. It seems like Joe B. never could get over it. He's always visiting Will and Martha as if he just couldn't believe that they're married. Well, one Sunday morning...
Oh, hello, Joe B.
Well, how are things, Will?
Oh, fine, fine. Come on in.
Yeah. Martha around?
No, she's out shopping.
On a Sunday?
Well, you know Martha. She likes to look around for antiques.
Yeah, that's a foolishness. Hey, there's something new on that sideboard there. What's that in that bowl? Goldfish?
Oh, no, that's a little turtle.
Is that a fact? A turtle? Now, why'd anybody want a turtle?
Just for a pet.
Well, you want to have a pet, why not get a dog?
Well, you don't have to walk a turtle.
Is this here turtle have a name?
Oh, yeah. That's Tartarucus.
Tartarucus?
Tartarucus. Means turtle in Greek.
Oh, I see. Sure old Tartar is okay, huh?
Well, he seems happy enough. For a turtle.
Well, he don't look too well to me, Will.
He doesn't?
No, he appears a bit peaked. I'd say he's ailing. What do you feed him?
You know, little bits of chopped meat, bugs, whatever.
Well, he's just not thriving. You got yourself a sick turtle on your hands, Will.
Gee, is that how he looks to you?
Don't you worry now, Will. We'll pull him through.
The next couple days, Joe B. was walking around town with that great big smile on his face. And if you knew Joe B., you knew a special stunt was brewing.
Hey, Will, look what I got for you. How's old Tartar?
Well, all right, I guess.
He appears a bit sluggish to me, but I got something here to pep him up. I phoned a professor at the state college. He said they were working on a specialized turtle diet.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. A diet that'll make a turtle grow strong, healthy, and bigger. And he sent me some in this here package.
A special diet?
Yeah, so why not try it out on old Tartar?
Oh, I'm not sure he needs it.
No, now, Will, this comes direct from State College. Could it be bad?
Well, no.
Well, then give it a try. What do you got to lose? I'll see you around, Will. Give my best to Martha now.
Yeah, I'll do that, Joby.
So long, Will.
I wonder what the ingredients of this diet could be. Probably highly concentrated protein.
Will, now wait.
Martha, I didn't know you were home.
Now, you hold it. Don't you feed any of that stuff to Tartarucus.
But Joe B. said...
I know what Joe B. said. I heard every word.
But if you were home all this time, why didn't you come in here and say hello to him?
Because I cannot stand the sight of Mr. Joseph B. Jefferson. Now, don't feed that junk to the turtle.
Why?
It's a trick.
Oh, what kind of trick?
If Joseph B. Jefferson's involved, there has to be a trick.
Well, what kind of a trick could anyone possibly play on a turtle?
Well, it just goes to show how no one should ever underestimate Joe B. Well, it wasn't more than about 2 weeks later.
Martha?
Yes, dear?
You look, come here.
Hmm?
Is it my imagination, or is Tartarucus actually growing?
Well,
You know, I'm sure of it. That turtle is actually getting bigger.
He does seem larger.
Sure, he couldn't have been more than 2 inches in diameter when we bought him, and now look at him, he's at least 3.
Uh-huh.
It's that diet. The diet Joe B. got for me from the state college. Look what it's been doing for Tartarucus.
Well, I'm afraid...
He's growing bigger every day. What in the world could possibly be wrong?
Well, I'll tell you, that turtle seemed to grow about 1 inch every week. And poor Will started telling everybody about the sensational diet Joe Bede got for him. How it was performing miracles for his turtle. But folks here all wised up. The minute Joe B's name was even mentioned, they knew there was a trick in it. And everybody caught on what it was, even Martha. One morning, she come in to see me.
Lester, you tell Mr. Jefferson to cut it out.
Cut what out, Martha?
Now, don't you look so innocent. You know what he's doing. He's got a bunch of turtles of different sizes, and he's switching them on poor Will.
Well, that ain't against the law, Martha.
I'll tell you what is against the law, Lester. And as deputy sheriff, you want to be aware of it.
Now, Martha...
Sneaking into our house while Will's at the plant and I'm teaching school. Now, that's trespass.
Now, Martha, you can't prove.
Why is everybody in this town so terrified of Joseph B. Jefferson?
You want to swear out a warrant for his arrest? You got to have evidence. Now, look, Martha, why don't you tell Will what Joe B's up to, and then it'll be all over.
I can't do that, Lester.
Why can't you?
Because I'm Will's wife.
I should think that was just because you're Will's wife.
Look, everybody in town's laughing at him, Lester, and If I tell him, it means I'm in on the joke, too, that I was smart enough to see something he couldn't. No. No, as far as Will's concerned, I can't know anything about all this, Lester.
Well, I don't know what I can do, Martha.
Well, you tell Joe B. this, for me. Tell him the very next time he sneaks into the house to switch those turtles, I might just be waiting there with a 12-gauge.
Now, Martha, there's no need to get
it. I might just be a scared and nervous lady alone in the house, frightened by what I think is a prowler. I could be so frightened out of my wits, I might just shoot first.
Now, Martha, you're only looking for trouble.
Now, just think, if I kill him by mistake, the joke, finally, would be on him, wouldn't it?
Well, I told Joe B. what you said. But I seen right off it was a mistake, because now a new element had been added, danger. And now there was a light in his eye, his face become flushed. And now I became scared.
You call it off? Why, Lester, I just begun.
Now, look, Joby, how much larger can a turtle get?
Well, you ain't gonna get any larger. You see, this particular stunt is a double reverse. Yes, sir. The first double reverse of my career. That old turtle is gonna get smaller.
Smaller? How can he get smaller?
The exact way he got bigger, with a little help from his friends. Evening, Will.
Oh, come on in, Joby.
Oh, Martha around?
Oh, no, she's out shopping.
For antiques, huh?
No, groceries.
Will, I'm afraid I don't have good news. Matter of fact, it could be pretty bad news for old Tartar.
Why, what's wrong?
Well, you know that professor over at the college? He called me on the phone. He said not to feed any more of that stuff to old Tartar.
Joby, I don't understand. Tartarucus seems to be thriving.
Well, he is, and he ain't. You see, the professor said they just made an amazing discovery about that diet. It seems that after a while, the turtle, instead of growing bigger, starts getting smaller.
Smaller?
Yeah. He starts growing smaller and smaller until one day, well, there just ain't nothing left of him at all. He just disappears.
And that's exactly what began to happen. It appeared to poor Will Tatum that his turtle was growing smaller and smaller in front of his eyes. Everybody in town thought it was the most comical thing. But what everybody didn't know was the game Martha was playing with Joe B. She was waiting for him with that double-barreled shotgun. But she couldn't be in the house 24 hours a day, and so far, Joe B. was lucky. But I didn't want to have a murder on my hands. And since I couldn't talk sense to Martha or to Joe B., I figured my only hope was Will himself.
Oh, come on in, Lester.
Well, thank you, Will. How's old Tartar?
Well, he's getting smaller and smaller.
Will, what kind of game are you playing? Why do you let Joe B. make a fool out of you? You know what he's been doing with them turtles. Well, you do, don't you?
Yeah.
So why do you let him get away with it?
Look, Lester, I have to. I have to let him get away with
it. You realize everybody in town thinks that you're a sap?
Well, Lester, they'd think so anyhow.
That's no answer.
Well, maybe there isn't any answer.
There's gotta be. Why do you allow Joe B. Jefferson to make you the town fool? That's what he's doing, you know.
Yes, I know.
And why do you stand for it?
Would you rather I killed him?
Now then, it seems that more than one member of a certain family might want to kill Mr. Joseph B. Jefferson. Martha, we can understand, but mild-mannered, easygoing Will? Why does he feel he has to take abuse? Well, now, think of people you know who seem to keep asking for punishment. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
Who's gonna help a child to walk? Make someone's dreams come true? Who's gonna help someone to talk? Easter seals and you. Who will be working all year round? Someone to count on too. And who will
seals.
Easter seals and you.
Easter seals helps crippled children and adults push back the limitations of their handicaps. Helps them to enjoy the good life. Miracles still happen, and you make them.
Easter seals and you.
Give to Easter seals.
Easter seals and you.
Give to Easter seals.
Easter seals.
For crippled children and adults.
Easter seals.
I haven't heard from them in a while. Are Easter seals still around?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, but they have a better, shall we say, politically correct description of people.
Well, they're coming for me.
Yeah.
They're coming for me.
Uh-oh. Okay.
You can't hide forever,
Dave. Okay, now, Dave, remember the plan. Remember the plan. Go to the park under the teeter-totter, and you'll find where the drop box is.
Goodness. I had no idea.
They missed me
on.
Again. They missed me again.
Dropbox. Oh, jeez. So much for felonies on every house. We've got a good story going here. That Joby is, and his voice is really distinctive. I'm trying to remember where else I know him from besides CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And I almost couldn't pick up on Hans Conried because he is playing such a straight character, you know, straight up character.
It's such a straight role for him. And,
yeah.
And just think of all the things on radio, on television. I don't know, I'm not sure how many. Oh, movies, of course. He was in the Twonky.
Twonky, yeah.
But
yeah.
He had other movies he was in as well. And all the cartoon things he did from Hoppity Hooper to Bullwinkle and so many other things that he did.
Dr. T? He was in Dr. T.
Yeah, that is not a children's movie. I mean, that is weird. I'm sorry.
Depends on the kid.
I guess.
I would have enjoyed it as a kid.
But, yes, he usually has such a refinement, such a eloquent diction and elocution.
Yes.
Or so over the top, you know, and of course, as our good friend, good old Bob would say, he was the one that really got that ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga on the Mel Brooks show, or Mel Blanc show. Yeah. So.
Yeah, he had that high tone, highfalutin speak.
That's why he often played professors or people of letters, shall we say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Saying in about 25 different ways, I'm overcharging you just because I can speak better than you can. Now cough up the cash.
Yeah.
Oh, in the, I guess, cartoon, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, he was voice in 24 of those episodes. Let's see, the TV movie that he was voice of Professor Warner Von Bear in The Great Bear Scare. Barefoot in the Park, the TV movie in 82. He was Victor Velasco. The American Dream TV series, he was 6 episodes of that. Fantasy Island, he showed up, 3 times?
Yeah.
16 episodes
also...
of Drac Pack.
Oh, wow.
Go ahead.
Was he on Lost in Space?
Hans Conried? I don't know.
Let me get down to the 60s here.
Gilligan's Island, I think. Wasn't he Wrong Way Feldman?
I think he was, yeah. 108 episodes of Bullwinkle.
Yeah, a lot of Bullwinkle.
Dudley Do-Right. He was Snidely Whiplash on Dudley Do-Right.
Yeah. Canadians just love Dudley Do-Right. Not.
Yeah. I'll save you, Nell.
No. Good horse.
Sweet Nell.
Good horse.
Sweet Nell, yeah. Yeah, who is Wrong Way Feldman in two episodes of Gilligan's Island. Wrong Way Feldman and the return of Wrong Way Feldman.
He did return. I remember that.
Oh.
Yep. I don't see Lost in Space here.
I don't think he did Lost in Space. I don't recall any episodes of him.
Was he American or European, if I may ask? I don't have that right in front of me.
He was born in Baltimore. He was
okay.
Baltimore,
so
and raised
definitely
in
a foreigner.
Both Baltimore and New York City.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a foreigner. Just like
he's
I was thinking his culture speak versus Dr. Smith, Jonathan Harris's, because he got rid of his New Yorker accent.
Yes, he did.
I think it was.
Yes.
So those two going at it, that would have been an episode.
Oh, my. Yeah. They had,
yeah,
they had comparable wit, I think.
He was at Columbia University, and let's see, he had been a member of Orson Welles' Mercury Theater Company.
Oh,
which was probably theater at the time. Oh, and of course, on radio, he was a regular on My Friend Irma. He was Professor Kropotkin. He was, no. He wasn't that good. He was Professor Kropotkin, yes.
Mm. So he was in theater on the air. Yeah, he really had to have the tools and the talent to have Mr. Welles have you aboard. And I wonder if he got to ride Mr. Welles' ambulance.
Could be. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
His ambulance? He had his own ambulance?
Well, you remember, well, before it was illegal. You go ahead, tell him, Dave.
Go ahead. Before it was illegal to do so, he would rent them at, like a taxi to take them from one studio to the next. Orson did,
Love that
guy. It was illegal to do that. And then they had the sirens, and everybody would pull over to make way for Orson Welles.
I love it.
Do they do that law for funeral cars? If you have a funeral procession, do you have to make way for that, depending upon the state? Because I wonder if there's a law. Can some people buy hearses?
I want one.
And if you get a bunch of your friends.
That's Dale's dream, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So if you want to, you want a hearse?
I want to ride in the front, okay? Let me be clear on that first. Preferably driving.
Oh, well, if you're going to
be when I asked my son about, because he's into cars and stuff, about possibly getting a hearse, he started leering at me, and I had to scream, I want to ride in the front. And he snapped his fingers like, darn it. Where does he get that from? I don't know. But I know where we get good radio from, Dave Binkley's wonderful programming, as he chose us a good one with the transformation of Joby. Let's hit part.
Yeah, we got this magic turtle here.
Yes, tartar making tartar sauce. I guess.
It has been written, tell one joke and you make 10 enemies. But that's only if you tell a joke. The figures really expand when you perform a joke. Joseph B. Jefferson, or Joe B., as he is unaffectionately called, is playing a joke on Will Tatum, and Will knows it.
I can't understand what you're saying, Will. Why would you have to kill Joe B.?
In self-defense?
Oh, you really lost me, Will. Joby ain't threatening your life.
Oh, but he is.
How?
Lester, why does he play practical jokes?
Why? Because he's full of fun.
He's filled with hate.
Oh, now, Will.
It's how he expresses his hostility. Each joke is intended to bring pain and embarrassment to another human being.
Oh, now, Will.
He hates people.
Oh, that's going a bit far.
You know I'm right, Lester. It's his way of wounding, even killing people. And we have to let him do it. You know why? Because if we stopped him, he'd have to do it in earnest.
Oh, no, you lost me.
Oh, no, you understand me. You just don't want to accept it, but you understand it. He hates me. First of all, because I married Martha.
Oh, now, he never did have much of a chance with Martha.
But he thinks he did. Second, I'm different. I read books. I have crazy ideas.
Will, aren't you making too much of this?
He has to have this outlet for his hatred, you see? Now, suppose I'd nip this whole turtle thing in the bud. Suppose I called the turn every time he pulled one of his jokes. I would eventually force him, provoke him, into physical violence. And then it would become a matter of kill or be killed.
Oh, I wish there was something I could do.
It keeps on building inside him. The urge to hurt people becomes stronger, and he has to satisfy it by becoming more and more complicated and expensive in his jokes. Well, he must have gone out and bought 15, maybe 20 turtles.
All them little turtles look alike.
Not exactly alike, Lester. Not like these. I tell you, a jeweler couldn't match pearls in a lady's necklace more carefully. And the sizes. Oh, that has to be subtle planning. It's perfect. He's an artist. But his mind, Lester, it's twisted. The time, the trouble, and now the very real risk he has to undergo.
Well, I still say you have to stop it. He's making you look like a dummy.
On the other hand, it's also known as turning the other cheek, isn't it? Excuse me, Lester.
Well, hi there, Will. I just thought I'd drop in to see how old Tartar's getting on.
Not too good, Joe B.
Well, hello there, Lester. Anybody being placed under arrest around here?
Well, there's somebody that ought to be.
Hey, now look at old Tartar. He did get just a mite smaller, don't you think, Will? Oh, poor old fellow.
Will, look at this. Look what I bought. Oh, I didn't know we had company.
Well, good evening, Martha.
Yeah, I was just going.
What is that ugly old plate you got there, Martha? Is it one of them antiques you keep running after?
Well, it's obviously a very old platter. The man said it was from somewhere in Central Europe around the 12th century. It doesn't matter. I only paid $1 for it.
$1 for a beat-up tin thing like that?
It's bronze. And you can see the designs on it. It looks like a coat of arms.
Say, Martha, you may have stumbled across a real find. It must have been 2 days later when it all began, early in the morning, before Martha and Will had to leave for work. Joe B. came to call.
Martha, Will, I want you to listen to me and not interrupt till I've said my piece. I had a dream last night.
Would you like a cup of coffee, Joe B.?
I seen an angel. An angel dressed in white and holding a sword. The hilt was gold and the blade was made of fire. And this angel said to me in a voice as sweet as honey, but at the same time edged with steel, Joseph B. Jefferson, you change your ways here. You stop playing impractical jokes on people, or you will roast an everlasting flame of hell. Will, Martha, can you ever forgive me?
Forgive you?
Now, what is this all about, Joe?
Forgive me for the stunt I pulled on you with that turtle. I've been switching 15 of them back and forth. Forgive me for all the pain and embarrassment I've ever caused you.
Oh, Joe.
Now, starting today, I'm beginning a new life. I want to be your friend. I mean, a real friend. And I want you to be mine.
Oh, Joe B., I can hardly believe what I'm hearing.
I can hardly believe what I'm saying, Martha, but well, something come over me, a kind of a transformation.
Oh, Joe B., Will and I, we would truly value your friendship.
For the next week, all you could hear around town was the transformation of Joe B. Folks could hardly believe it, but there was Joe B., smiling, gentle, kindly, a new Joe B., a fellow who could just not do enough for you. I said to myself, if this is a practical joke of Joe B.'s, sure, it's the biggest one of them all. But what could he gain by it? Well, one morning he was having breakfast with Martha and Will when Joe Pearlie, the letter carrier, knocked on the door. Morning, Miss Tatum.
Oh, what can I do for you, Mr. Pearlie?
I got a letter here. I think maybe it's too important to leave in the box. Never did handle such a letter in all my entire life. That's a handsome envelope, ain't it? It's made out of parchment, and your name and address is engraved. You see, there's this... Well, it looks like some royal coat of arms right here.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Pearlie. If it turns out there's anything in this envelope that concerns you, I'll send for you immediately. Good morning.
Morning.
Will.
Yes, Martha?
Will, what do you make of this?
Hey, that's something. Well, open it.
Well, it's almost a pity to tear this envelope. What could it be?
Oh, what does it say?
Let me see. Here, dear Mrs. Tatum, an heirloom of purely sentimental value, which has been in our family for some generations, disappeared some time ago. I have traced it to the United States and, by a fortunate stroke, to you. I am interested in buying it, and I offer you $500. I am staying at the Excelsior Hotel in Chicago. The plate has no intrinsic value, and $500 is an extremely generous offer. May I hear from you? Signed, Maximilian Maruka, Grand Duke. Oh, Will, what do you think?
Gee, well, what a stroke of luck.
And it only cost me a dollar.
Hey, let's send this guy a letter immediately.
Well,
what, Joby?
Well, it's your platter, your decision. But why should this fellow offer you $500 for that junky platter?
Well, obviously, it's a family heirloom.
Obviously. Why? Because he says so? Well, why $500? Why not $50? Why not $1,000? Who is he, anyhow?
It says here, Prince Maximilian Maruka, the royal house of Serenia.
Serenia? Well, now, where is Serenia? I never heard of it.
Well, still, a man wants to offer us $500. Now, that's a return of $499 on my investment. Are you saying not to take it?
All I'm saying, Martha, is sleep on it.
Well, Martha and Will, they couldn't sleep on it. They was too excited. $500 is like a fortune.
Well, you sleep on it?
Yes.
Yeah, and we decided to take the man's offer.
Well, if that's what you decided.
I'll write this fellow, Prince Maximilian, in the Excelsior Hotel in Chicago.
No, you can do better than that, honey. You can call him up.
Oh, that's right. Oh, hello? I want to place a long-distance call to the Excelsior Hotel in Chicago to a Prince Maximilian Maruka. Right. Well, just think all the things we could do with that $500. Oh, my goodness, she's ringing the hotel now. And the clerk is answering. Oh, see who that is, Will.
Yeah, sure, I will.
Oh, my goodness. The clerk is ringing the prince's room right now.
Good morning, folks. Got another important-looking letter. One of them real classy parchment envelopes.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Furley.
Oh, it must be another letter from the prince. Open it, dear. See what he says. It's answered. The phone is answered. Hello? Oh, my goodness, it's the prince.
Oh, Martha.
Yes, Your Highness. I'm Mrs. Tatum.
Martha.
I got your letter. Yes, sir, Ed. Your offer is acceptable.
No, Martha, this is a letter from the Grand Duke Tycroft, who offers you $1,000 for the platter.
What?
$1,000.
Prince, Your Highness, I'll call you back. What does that letter say?
Well, it says, Dear Mrs. Tatum, we are tracing a valuable relic of our country's past. We have reason to believe you may have bought it at a flea market. Enclosed is a picture. If it is the same platter, I will offer you $1,000 for it. Sincerely, the Grand Duke Vasil Tycross Hotel, Imperial, New York City.
Oh, Will, you realize what this means? It means we can get $1,000 for it.
Only, Martha, you already agreed to sell it for $500 to the prince.
I agreed to no such thing.
He accepted his offer.
If you'll excuse me, Will, Martha didn't exactly accept. You know, she said his offer was acceptable. That's merely a statement of fact, not intent.
Ethically, she accepted his offer.
But we can get twice as much from this new person.
Martha, a promise is a promise.
But it's $1,000 against $500.
Money isn't everything.
You talk as if it's nothing at all. Sometimes, Will Tatum, it might be well for you to get your head out of the clouds.
Oh, Martha, Will, you two shouldn't quarrel over money.
But they did quarrel. They quarreled long and loud. And you should remember, they were both folks who never quarreled at all. And the letters came from Chicago, from New York, from the prince, from the Grand Duke.
Dear Mrs. Tatum, if my original offer is insufficient, I will raise it to $1,500. of the utmost importance that my family recover this precious heirloom. I offer you $2,000. $5,000. Signed, Prince Maruka. $10,000. Grand Duke Tycroft. And you, Will, you wanted to sell this platter for $500. Now when I get this $50,000...
You've only been offered $10,000.
These two men need that plate. I tell you, the bidding will reach $50,000. More.
I've never seen you like this,
Martha. Oh, I'm glad I listened to Joe B. There's a man with brains.
All right, now stop, stop, stop right there and now. It's a stunt.
What? How? How could it be a stunt?
Well, you said the magic word, Joe B.
I don't understand.
Ah, Joe B's been trying to tear me down in your eyes ever since we've been married. You know it. The direct attack doesn't work, so he switches tactics.
What kind of tactics?
Well, it's working, isn't it? We're quarreling with each other. This house has become unpleasant, uncomfortable.
Will, I...
Honey,
don't...
it's the old catch flies with honey routine. Now, that platter you picked up at some flea market gave him an inspiration. So he's been writing you these phony letters.
Phony?
Of course they're phony. They have to be phony.
But, Will, I've spoken to both the prince and the Grand Duke in Chicago and New York.
Now, phony. He hired actors.
But, Will...
Martha, I can prove it. Beyond the shadow of a doubt.
When in doubt, quote Shakespeare, reputation is an idle and most false imposition, oft got without merit and lost without deserving. Or the Bible, can the leopard change its spots? The point is, has Joe B. undergone a sincere conversion, or is the wolf only disguised in sheep's clothing? Act three shall complete the tale.
I want that sinus medicine.
Headache tablet?
No, the sinus medicine that relieves headache and congestion, internal sinus pressure and post-nasal drip.
You mean Sinoff?
Exactly.
Compare Sinoff tablets with anything you've ever taken for sinus. No sinus tablet you can buy relieves more symptoms. Sinoff gives you a full dose of pure aspirin plus a powerful sinus drainer. Sinoff works fast to help sinus pain while you drain.
S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sinoff, the sinus medicines in the bright red box. Take when needed, only as directed.
If you went into a Buick dealer's between now and April 30th, do you know what would happen? Well, if you ordered one of four cars with a list of specially selected options, you'd get a vinyl top at no extra charge. Like that Skylark over in the corner? Now order one with sport mirrors, a rally tilt steering wheel, body side stripes, and vinyl buckets, and Buick pops for the top. To find out about other cars, talk to your Buick dealer. He knows all that stuff.
Buick, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Trying to figure out which is worse, post-nasal drip or the heartbreak of psoriasis? I don't know.
Well, the psoriasis would be a heartbreak, so that would be more, I think.
Okay. I'm not a doctor. I played one on TV once, though.
Yes, I'm not a physician either, but I've watched many of them in movies.
Yes, I watch a lot of TV.
And I'll try to
learn. Well, I don't know how to fly this plane.
And I slept in a Holiday Express.
Hey, Angel Asylum is in the chat.
Hey, Angel, welcome, welcome, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Fogsbane joined us a bit ago. Here we go. Packing in the house.
Dale, I've been looking up Joe Silver in some of his acting. He did a lot of acting, especially TV and TV movies. He wasn't the creep in the voice of the creep in Creep Show 2.
That's what I know his voice from. Thank you. That was driving me crazy. Yeah, he was
all in all, they're mostly one-ons for different shows, except for a series called Faye, which I have no idea what that series was in 1975-76. And he was also additional voices in Scooby and Scrappy-Doo Adventures.
Scrappy-Doo
never happened. My least favorite
of
all the Scooby-Doo stuff.
Scrappy-Doo never happened. It never happened.
Come on, Uncle Scoob.
Scrappy Doo is now in the far-off past with Jar Jar Binks.
Yes. They are the same person, actually. Much like
yeah.
Michael and
the Wonder
Toya
Twins.
Jackson were.
The other Wonder Twins. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, the Wonder Twins, yeah. I always wondered why they were Wonder Twins.
I wonder.
They didn't even look alike.
It's a wonder that the Super Friends put up with them as long as they did. That's a wonder.
There you go. Wasn't there? It's a wonder there wasn't a violent crime. But neither here nor there.
I don't trust this Joby guy.
I think it's Joby being Joby.
Except, you know, she's talking to the guy in New York, and she called the guy in Chicago.
Yeah.
But didn't go through him, so it makes you wonder. Makes you wonder.
Because
you do think, you do think it's got to be a setup.
Yeah, it's just
so
way too much happenstance.
Yeah.
I don't know who's setting up whom.
That's a question. That's a good question. I like that line of thinking.
That could complete the transformation that way. In that case, I want to hear Act 3.
You schmott cookie. Let's hear Act 3 while we got the time.
Here we go.
We'll be back, baby.
Everyone dreams of finding a Rembrandt in some old dusty attic, or stumbling on that rare, forgotten first edition, or that priceless coin or stamp. And Martha Tatum dreamed that dream, too. Now it would seem her dream has come true. But there is a small cloud, no larger than a man's hand, looming on the horizon. And that cloud's name is Joby.
How can you prove all this is just another one of Joby's stunts?
I'll prove it.
Look, would he hire a man to live at the Excelsior Hotel in Chicago and another to stay at the Imperial in New York? Well, they've been there 2 weeks, and those places cost a fortune.
Oh, Martha, money is no object to Joby. He's willing to spend it.
But to invest so much money, effort, time, he'd have to be crazy.
He is crazy. Dangerously crazy.
But where's your proof?
It's in the public library.
The public library?
Yeah, come on along. Now this is the Almanach de Gotha. It's got a listing of all the royal and noble families of Europe. Now, Joby wouldn't know about a thing like this, you see. So let's turn to Serenia and just see if...
We'll look. Right here, at the bottom of the page.
The House of Maruka, first Prince Maximilian.
There is a Prince Maruka, a real prince. Now, turn to the keys.
Yeah, but Martha, how...
Here, the House of Tycroft. Hereditary Grand Dukes, perpetually at war with the House of Maruka.
Gee, Martha, That's why
they're bidding against each other for the platter. It must have some sort of political significance.
Okay, all right. He's smarter than I gave him credit for.
Will!
He knew I'd check up on him.
Oh, Will, you're becoming neurotic on the subject.
Now, wait a minute. The Almanach de Gotha. You usually don't find that in small town libraries. What's it doing here?
But you were the one who said...
I can prove something. Just let me talk to Letty, the librarian. Letty?
Good morning, Will.
Letty, the Almanach de Gotha... How does it happen that you've got it?
It came as a gift.
Oh, a gift, huh?
Oh, we get lots of books as gifts.
And when did it come?
A few weeks ago.
Who sent it?
It was anonymous.
Yeah. Yeah, that figures. You see, Martha, it all falls into place. He got the Almanach de Gotha and found the family names he wanted. And then he sent the Almanach here to the library in case I became suspicious.
Will, Are you sure you're all right?
And now the story's all over town.
But you're being unreasonable.
The bidding will go up, up, up to 100,000, and then the whole thing will collapse and be exposed for the practical joke that it is. The biggest practical joke Joe B. ever pulled.
Oh, Will, leave Joe B. out of this. He's reformed. He has nothing to do with it.
No.
But you always wanted to believe good of everyone.
Everyone except Joe B. I can prove he's at the bottom of it.
You haven't been able to prove anything yet.
Well, Will was right. The whole town was talking, gossiping and speculating. And people just couldn't get over Martha Tatum's good luck. But things were going from bad to worse between Will and Martha. Hello? Who? Oh, yeah, she is. Martha.
Thank you. Hello? Oh, yes, Paul. Surely. Now, I wanted the sofa in blue. And how about lime for the drapes? Lime, yes. Well, we can talk about it tomorrow. Bye now.
What can we talk about tomorrow, Martha? And who is Paul?
Oh, he's a new interior decorator in town, and he's designing our new home.
What new home?
The one we're going to buy.
With what?
With the money we're getting from the plate.
But, Martha, we're not getting any money. The whole thing's a fraud.
Oh, the bidding is already up to $30,000, so it shows what you know.
Martha, what's happened to you? You've lost your head. You're not going to get any money. Joe B. This is to be his greatest stunt.
Will, if you speak one more word against Joe B., I'll never talk to you again in my life.
Well, Will, what are you doing here?
What am I doing here? What are you, a deputy sheriff, doing in a saloon?
Well, I came here to get a drink. You came here to get drunk. Two different things.
Well, happy days.
You won't find happy days in the bottom of that glass. Will, what's it all about?
Martha, you see, Lester, Joe B.'s going to make her and me the laughingstock of this town. This royal plate stunt of his, he'll make Martha look like such a fool. And when it suits him, he'll tell everybody how he worked.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Remember what I told you? He was progressing from a hot foot and exploding cigars. The stunts would get grander and more elaborate, more expensive.
Yeah, but you have to have proof, Will.
I have the best proof in the world. The feeling in my bones.
Okay, maybe you're right. What are you going to do?
I don't know, Les. Yes. Yes, I do know. This is a showdown that has to come. I tried to keep peace. I went out of my way. But this thing between Joe B. and me, it's got to be settled, finally.
No, Will, don't be hasty.
Well, you're the one who said it originally, Lester. You remember when he pulled the turtle trick? You said I'd have to stop him, and I said no. Well, I see now that was just appeasement on my part.
But what do you plan to do?
Oh, I can't discuss that with the deputy sheriff.
Morning, folks. Here's your usual mail from their royalties and the rest of it.
Thank you, Mr. Pearly. Good day.
What's the price today, Miss Tatum?
Oh, you'll be informed in due time, Mr. Pearly. Now, what's this? Oh, Mrs. Tatum, on behalf of a free Serenia, we beg you not to sell the plate to either the Grand Duke or the Prince. This plate, the symbol of authority, should be given to the Committee for a Free Serenia. We have no money, but you will be amply repaid by the goodness of your deed. What do you suppose this is all about?
Oh, you're at it. It's fantastic. Give them the platter.
Give them?
Well, yes, certainly. They deserve it.
Now I know why the Duke and the Prince kept bidding. Evidently, the party that has the plate has the claim to being the legitimate government. Oh, I'll have to show this to Joe B. It puts a new perspective on things. Oh, this plate, it's no longer worth thousands. It's the fate of a nation. It's worth millions.
But if we believe in freedom and justice and liberty...
Oh, but we do. We certainly do.
Well, then we should give this to the people, not sell it.
Oh, you should never let sentiment interfere with business.
Is that something you learned from Joe B?
Well, it's certainly something you never learned. What do you think, Joe B?
Well, Martha, it's got to be a crank. This thing's been in the papers. Obviously, somebody's trying to cash in on it. But forget it. Forget it. Here's what we're going to do, Martha. We'll invite the Grand Duke and the Prince to come here, say, on Saturday, and they can bid. Winner gets the plate.
Well, I better answer it, Joe B.
Hi, folks. Just one letter today. What's the bid now?
Oh, you won't miss a thing, I promise you, Mr. Pearlie. Good day.
Good day.
Oh, this envelope, it looks the same as the one I got the other day. It is the same. Listen, dear Mrs. Tatum, the plate belongs to the people. We will use any means to recover it. If you refuse to let us have it, the Committee for Free Serenia.
Well, that settles it.
Settles what?
This can be dangerous.
Oh, Will, I tell you, it's a crime.
I won't have that plate in my house.
Now, just a minute. It's as much my house as yours.
No, wait. I will take custody of the plate for you, Martha. I'm handling the negotiations anyhow.
Oh, well, it'll probably be safer with you.
Now, we'll set the time and place for the Prince and Grand Duke to arrive. Tell them to bring plenty of money.
Well, you mean you're going to disregard this letter? How can you?
Well, I better be getting along. Got plenty of details to tend to. Let me have the plate. Huh?
We'll talk later.
Goodbye, folks, and Will, don't be so nervous.
Martha, get out of it.
Out of what?
Give the plate to the committee, whoever they are.
And give up $1 million?
Martha, there isn't any $1 million. Come Saturday, you'll be waiting for the phony prince and the grand duke, and nobody will show up. And then Joe Beale start laughing out loud in public and start telling how he did it.
Well, let me show you how wrong you are. You say the Grand Duke is phony. The Prince is phony. The plate is phony.
Yes.
Then if it's all phony, why isn't the Committee for Freedom or whatever phony too? You see? You can't answer that.
Well, from here on, a lot of things can't be answered. Because that night, I was sitting in my office. I got a call from Letitia Haas, a Liberian who lives down the street from Joe B.
Lester, you better come quick. I think I've seen someone prowling around the outside of Joe B's house. And I'm not sure, but I think he might have had a gun.
But just as I arrived at Joe B's house, I heard... I jumped out of the car. I ran into the house. Yeah, there was the heavy smell of cordite. A gun had gone off in here. And in the living room, lying dead on the floor, was Joe B. Yeah, all 300 pounds of Joe B. Dead. Yeah, it's gone, Martha.
Oh, then the committee, whoever they were, came there and killed him. Oh, poor Joe B.
Yeah, poor Joe B.
You better lie down, dear.
Yes.
Before you do, Martha, you say you were asleep when it happened, and Will...
Yes, Will and I went to sleep at the same time.
I see. Go get some rest, Martha.
Yes, I will.
Did you kill him, Will?
Why would I kill him?
Well, let us say you went over to his house.
Why?
To offer him a way out. Get rid of the plate by giving it to the committee or whatever. This means that poor Martha isn't left with egg on her face, waiting for the nobility to show up and offer her millions. He refuses. He wants you and her to be humiliated completely. So you shoot him.
Now, Lester, why should I shoot the man who's helping my wife to become a millionaire?
Will, you told me it had come to a showdown. You or him. His practical jokes had forced one of you to kill the other.
Oh, but he reformed. He no longer played jokes.
And what do you call this plate thing?
Who says that's a joke? The names are real? Who says the letters are a fake? Who says the plate is a fake? It's gone, so we'll never know. You call the hotels in New York and Chicago. The Prince and the Duke, dead register there.
No, but we know...
What do we know? Lester, we only know that my wife bought a plate at a flea market. From then on, she received a number of letters. One of them was threatening. And as a result, Joe B. was killed. The plate is gone and the whole thing is all over. Now, can we let it rest at that?
Well, I suppose we'll have to let it rest at that.
And there the matter rested. And who knows the truth? Was it a genuine antique plate? Did the royal houses and the revolutionaries try to recover it? Did Will write the last letters himself? If he did, he'd be a fool to tell. And basically, why should we even press him? Well, we'll have something interesting to tell you in just a few moments. St. Louis, Missouri. The boy who cried wolf is a favorite fable for children, but it has its most serious applications. After all, adults who cry wolf, by virtue of their very age, have been crying it longer than children. So, here you had Joe B., Joseph B. Jefferson, a practical joker all his life. Had he reformed in the end, or was this his last and greatest stunt? Our cast included Hans Conried, Ian Martin, Rainer Rayburn, and Joe Silver. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I'll bet your checkbook has a six-figure balance.
Well, I'll have to think about it.
I'm sorry, doll. I want the money. It's 11:30. Meet you at Collie's Cupboard at 5. Hand over the cash. And rest easy.
Oh, I don't think so. Oh, you're rotten to the core. Every blackmailer is. One payment means another until I couldn't pay.
I won't be greedy.
You say you're a sick man.
Just look at me. One foot in the grave.
If you die...
Don't count on it. The arrangement I've just proposed has already made me feel wonderful. With money in my pocket, I'll be a new man.
And if I refuse, you expose the story.
Uh-huh.
Even though you'd be arrested.
Of course. What have I got to lose?
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Sinoff, the sinus medicines. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Well, he's dead. That's so low it hurts. Now that hurts too. What? Somebody step on a goat?
I hope so.
That poor goat. That interesting story. Do you think? Do you think Gilby played one
really
last stunt, or?
I think it was the hubby pulling the stunt on Joby.
That could
be. And his wife.
Could have been.
He did have feelings of persecution.
Correct. Or,
I mean,
how would
Joby have known about that book? He was the one that anonymously donated the book.
Or the wife could have been playing a wonderful performance of being upset at the hubby, going to Joe B for counsel. Then,
possibilities are endless.
Endless. The suspects. Round up the usual suspects.
Yeah. Boy, this is why radio is truly the theater of the mind.
And I love it because this is, you know, in many mystery theaters, they do leave things up in the air. They don't give you a definitive answer. And I like that upon occasion, you know?
Yeah. You can overdo that, but when applied well, we've seen that in other forms of entertainment. Where it comes off really well if done right. Yep.
Because otherwise, everything comes out hunky-dory, and they really have to twist upside down and do flips, backflips to get to the happy ending type thing. So it's kind of nice once in a while to say, hey, you know what? Not all of life is happy endings.
Depends which massage parlor you go to. All right. So.
Unless you're just Deshaun Watson. Right, right, yeah.
So. Somebody ought to will hit me in the face. I'll tell you right now.
Don't hear ambulances outside of your house again, Dale? Yeah, ambulances
nope.
again?
That was Dave last night. I didn't have any ambulances.
Okay.
No.
Any sirens? They're coming to take you away.
There's one that we use for fun, but I don't want to discuss that. That's kind of personal.
Dale's town is so small, like he has to leave town to change his mind, you know?
That's right.
They don't have room for a 7-Eleven. It's a 5-Eleven there, you know?
But our main attraction is a man who met Andy Griffith. Yep. That was our main attraction.
Speaking of main attractions, I believe we have some pranks that we can quote from.
We can.
History.
Yes, Dave dug up some pranks that went horribly wrong.
They did, yes.
Shall we take turns with these guys?
Sure.
We could do that. Why don't we each do one, and then maybe we could hit the jukebox and do some more.
Sure. Sounds good. We got plenty. We got time.
Go ahead. CW brought it up. Go ahead and choose one there.
All right. Let me see. This will tickle your sweet tooth. Hash cakes. Joseph Tinelli and an Ian Walker are the sort of kids everyone would have wanted at their school. The teachers thought it would be funny to repay their teachers for all their dedication to the boys' education and needs by making them a petty.
CW, we're losing you here.
Yeah.
It got real muffled. I didn't hear most of what you said.
All right.
There you go.
Let's see. A couple of 18-year-old high school students thought it would be funny to repay their teachers for all their dedication to their educational needs by baking them a parting gift. There was no run-of-the-mill brownies. These were brownies packed with marijuana.
Oh, wow.
The teachers had cleverly never encountered hash cakes before, because within 19 hours, members of the staff were taken ill, rushed to the nearest ER. The pair were ordered to do volunteer work. Worse still, the entire contents of the canteen were wiped out as a wave after wave of teachers were hit with the munchies.
Oh, my.
Ah, the hallowed halls of academia. Yeah. Gotta have those Funyuns. Funyuns. Give me Funyuns and Fritos.
Those are not your Funyuns. They're my Funyuns. Fake death. Here's the prank. A man convinces his ex-wife he hanged himself. Let's face it, ex-wives, their second role in life is being the punchline to pretty much every joke that I certainly can come up with in my case, or practice wife, as Dave says. But in 2004, there was one ex-wife who was certainly left with the last laugh. Randy Wood, embittered and angry and wanting to get over his past ex, called her up and told her to come over to his place. He had something to show her, he said. When Wood's ex-wife arrived, she found her late ex-husband hanging by a noose from a tree in the front garden. Rather than grab the nearest stick and beat him like the human pinata he really is, she immediately called 911, presumably in hysterics at what she had seen. Cue in the firemen, policemen, paramedics showing up en masse. But when a fireman went to cut Wood down, they found a concealed harness supporting his body weight and one's sniggering ex-husband totally intact. It was a short-lived victory, however, as he was subsequently fined $1,000 and sent to jail for a year. It was all worth it.
I've got one here where Icelandic a teenager calls George Bush's private number. 16-year-old Vasil Atlason doesn't remember where he got the private phone number for the leader of the free world, but he had it for a few years before he made the call in 2007 asking for a private meeting. The White House spokesperson insisted that he actually dialed the main switchboard for the West Wing, but hold on your hats, that turned out to be a big fat lie. Claiming to be real Icelandic President Ólafur Ragnar Grissom, the bill was passed through several levels of security, each quizzing him about his identity, questions he easily answered by consulting Wikipedia. In the end, that's probably where they got the questions from, huh? In the end, Bush's secretary called Vasil to expect a call from the president soon. Instead, the police showed up at his home, hauled him back to the station, and interrogated him for several hours under orders to find the source of the leak. In a country none too enamored with George W., Vasil Atlason became a local hero. So what did the teenager plan to say if he ever got Bush on the phone? I just wanted to talk to him, have a chat, and invite him to Iceland and see what he'd say. He said, sounds like a pretty good strategy. There you go.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
It was. So, with that, why don't we throw a wooden nickel in there? We can come back with some more.
Okay.
Sure. It's tune time. My treat!
Now we're going to play a Charleston Parisienne.
Thank you.
play the Lombardo Medley.
One of the greatest pranks of all time, I was just thinking, was encapsulated in a classic film. The Sting was nothing but a giant prank.
It was.
Right.
Very cleverly written film, and I love the I love period pieces. Period. But the ragtime music that was just a really, really good movie.
Yeah, Mark.
Well cast.
Marvin Hamlish and Robert Redford, and just quite a show there.
Oh, Robert Shaw.
And the one that's a little more modern that also had Mr. Redford was one that had Sidney Poitier, Dan Aykroyd, and the late River Phoenix was called Sneakers. And they were pen testers, penetration testers. That's the true prank, where you are hired by a company to find all their weak spots, and you conquer all the weak spots and show them your security is El Crapola. So... But yeah,
I never did catch that one. That sounds like a good one.
It is Sneakers. Yeah. You should really see that. That's really intriguing. Sir Ben Kingsley's in there as well.
I'm trying to think of other great prank movies.
Let's see. Everything in Mission Impossible technically was a prank.
True.
Only if you choose to accept the mission.
Mission.
Yes.
This recording will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Good luck, Dale.
Yes. Next prank. When you learn one of your best buds is going to get married, you throw a little party for him, right? You might order a keg of his favorite beer, call up his mates, and get together for a Friday night down the pub, knees up. Not if you're Australian. Gianni Catanzaro. His coworkers decided something a bit more special was required to celebrate his last days on Earth as a bachelor. Firstly, Gianna was grabbed, punched in the nay-nays, which, as we all know, fellas, is a pretty bad prank as it is, had his wrists and ankles duct-taped to a fence, was stripped to his drawers, and egged. Enough's enough, right? Now, Gianni's loving coworkers then thought it'd be a good idea to pour gasoline on the floor instead of the light. Fair play to the lad. Gianni actually managed to get himself free, only to fall face first into the roaring flames. The outcome? A postponed wedding and a canceled honeymoon. The kicker? Gianni was the one fired because the burns to his face and exposed body weren't punishment enough for that heinous act of his announcing his marriage to his mates. Now that's a prank gone wrong.
That is a prank gone wrong.
No kidding. Big ouch.
Yep, there ought to be a lawsuit.
Sure, there could have been. Go ahead, CW.
Oh, let's see now. What's tasty here? Oh, yeah. Dead dog prank. Let's see.
I did see that one, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
this can't be good. This can't be good.
Because this guy pulled one of the sickest practical jokes of all time. Getting hold of a dead chihuahua alone is pretty messed up, but to then go and tie it on the bumper of a coworker, Kevin Malloy's car, is just plain twisted, completely unaware of the deceased mutt flopping about at the rear end of his auto. Kevin goes several miles without stopping, partly due to the fact that Kev is a bit hard of hearing and couldn't hear the numerous irate motorists honking their horns in distress. Eventually, Kevin... I can't read the rest of this. Eventually, Kevin was alerted to his dead passenger, and he in turn alerted the police, who wasted no time in charging Paul Gooby with the unlawful disposal of a dead animal. You've got to ask yourself, would he have gotten away with it if he used a Doberman? Scooby-Doo. Scooby. Scooby-Doo.
Took his dog for a drag.
And I got one here. False deadline prompts near-death experience.
Uh-oh.
Life in the fast lane can be a stressful one. Deadline after deadline flies by without any cessation. This was Glenn Howlett's mindset before his colleagues at London City Hall decided to wind him up. Poor old Glenn was happily working through his latest stress-induced report when he received a memo informing him the report was actually due 2 weeks earlier than he had planned for. Receiving the memo whilst on holiday, Glenn quickly returned home, set up his office to work, and began the panic of a lifetime, presumably while still wearing his swim trunks. Shortly afterwards, he collapsed with a suspected heart attack. Contrite and apologetic from what could have been quite possibly dead, Glenn accepted that he would not be able to complete his report in time and decided to apply for an ignominious early retirement. It was at this point that one of the pranksters informed him of their hilarious joke. Great timing. Glenn, as anyone in their right mind would, saw the funny side and promptly and successfully sued City Hall for damages.
Oh.
Some weeks later, another memo was sent around telling everyone not to pull pranks. This best bit, if only Glenn had clocked a date on the original memo, April 1st.
Nice. Yep. Next week we're hitting the links.
Erie House.
Yeah, we're hitting the links, Dave. Golf.
Yeah.
Golf can be murder. We got Dark Fantasy, Crisis, and Gangbusters. And then on Saturday, X-1 and Theater 5.
Yep. It's Masters weekend next weekend. So, yeah, there's an X-1 story about golfing. Can you believe that?
Yep.
There was one about baseball.
We're going to putter around with 5 radio programs next weekend.
That should be fun.
Don't forget to join us. I believe you can get a rerun of Gar Horrible Horror today.
Yes.
At 8 o'clock.
He's having trouble with his equipment, his computer equipment. And
yep.
We'll leave it at that. But anyway, he's trying to get through a program, one of his past programs, because he doesn't want to work that hard to present a new show. And then the new show can't be seen because of his technical difficulties. So,
yep.
Classic Gar tonight.
Indeed. Well,
all right.
But got some other good things coming up in the future. We're getting trapped. We're going to stay up past midnight. We're going to be haunting things, plane crashes, all kinds of stuff. That's coming up in the next month or so. So there.
The plane.
Yeah, but so the landing, it crashes on you. Okay.
the crash boss, the plane.
On that happy note, it's time for our dear friend, Vincent Price.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Perfect.
Almost. Okay.
Nicely done.
Mine shut off a little early, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really an enjoyable CBS mystery, that Joby, because you have all these witnesses, I mean, all these suspects. I mean, the wife could have done it because she was the friend who first said she might accidentally kill the guy. Then the husband said he should kill the guy, but, you know.
I didn't even think of that because the wife, she's the one that, quote, unquote, talked to the person. We didn't hear the person on the other line. She supposedly talked to the person.
Yes.
Oh!
Uh-huh.
Ah!
Mm-hmm. Another twist. Another
Only us twisted folks can figure it out.
There's more twists in that movie than Chubby Checker had.
That's right.
Yeah.
Other than a good pretzel.
Yeah, that's a twist and shout, a la the Beatles. Twist and shout.
Ever since this pandemic, you cannot get a good pretzel.
Really?
No good pretzel. Yeah. My favorite types, they're all gone. Snyder's, of all things. Snyder of Hanover. All gone.
They
still have some, but not my favorite ones of theirs.
Ah, which ones are your favorites?
Homestyle is absolutely the best. They have like a dark blue label. And then dipping sticks. Seems like they're baked darker. I like the carbon.
Oh, you like the carbon?
Yes. I like carbon. I like my steaks well done. I like carbon. I like charring the vegetables on a grill. Carbon is good.
Yeah. No, that's not a briquette. Just shove that one over. That's the meat. Just shove the briquette over.
Yeah.
Shove it over Dale's way, yeah.
Yeah, I don't need the briquette. I don't need the meat. Give me the briquette. I'll be fine.
There you go.
Yeah, my wife likes the things well done, and I like it. I tell them, it just hurt a little. Just hurt it a little, you know.
Yeah.
The way it is for me.
Just hurt
light
it.
The fire in the same room with it. That'll be enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
Run it through a warm room, as the man once said.
Oh, just have steak tartare and call it good.
I'm eating healthier, I think, as I'm getting older, because I have to. But I'm really getting into this gardening business and fresh herbs.
I wonder what if the reverse would happen if, say, for example, you were a person who ate healthy all of their life, just ate clean and everything, and all of a sudden,
you get hit by a bus.
Twilight years. Yeah, there's that. But I was thinking, in your twilight years, you say, what the hey? So you eat a couple of pizzas a day and wash it down with a couple of gallons of cola and
beer.
Have some cheesecake. More cheesecake, some chocolate syrup on top of it, and whipped cream, and then a big Dutch apple pie, hot out of the oven, with a couple of slices of super extra sharp cheddar all over it.
You're killing me. You're absolutely killing me. Oh, my gosh. I feel my glucose rising just listening.
And I just ran across this from a different website on the Practical Jokes, guys. This is, I didn't share this website because most everybody, somebody dies in this one. Well, this one, nobody dies. It's called Long-Term Prankster Convinces People to Get Naked Nationwide. It says, I know, you would never fall for this one, but the fact is that this happened more than 70 times in 30 states. Between 1992 and 2004. The phone calls followed a similar pattern. A man claiming to be a police officer would telephone a manager or a supervisor at a small business, usually a fast food restaurant. He would ask the manager in charge to help detain a suspected criminal, employee, or customer, giving a vague description that matched someone in a store or restaurant. Over the phone, he would tell the manager to take the suspect into a private location, have her strip naked, and sometimes abuse her. The weirdest, creepiest incident happened in a Kentucky McDonald's in 2004 when an assistant manager and her fiancé, who she called to the scene, or her fiance, I'm sorry, called to the scene, imprisoned an employee for 3.5 hours. Had her strip and spanked her and forced her to perform oral sex, all because of what the man on the phone said. The entire ordeal was captured on surveillance camera, and the couple broke up that very night. Police eventually drew the connection between the incident across the country and traced the caller's number to a phone card a Walmart and a video or surveillance video. They arrested David R. Stewart, a correctional officer and a married father of five. Among his belongings, they found dozens of applications for police department jobs, hundreds of police magazines, and various police-style uniforms, guns, and holsters. He was charged with impersonating a police officer and soliciting sodomy, but not convinced nonetheless. Since this arrest, the prank calls have stopped. By the way, the 2012 movie Compliance is based on this ripped from the headlines true story. It is a decent watch if you have nothing else to do, it says. Okay.
Hmm. Holy cow. That is, wow.
That's,
I don't know.
That's why they were assistant managers. They didn't, you don't know better when you're an assistant, I guess.
Yeah, you gotta have some brain. I've never been a manager per se. I've been an ad hoc manager, and I got pranked one time, and after that, it was never again. I acquiesced to what this person want, but I gave them the least of what they could get. But because they said, "Well, I happen to know the so and so," so I just, you know, it was a bad day anyway. So I gave them what they want, just not what they wanted. But after that, I never acquiesced again. I mean, I even refused a customer where the manager said, "You want to talk to the manager? Here's the manager." Got the manager. Manager gave in to them, and guess what? Said person was hauled off to jail for fraud. As long as it wasn't me.
Yep.
Yep. That's one of my prouder points, seeing a manager with a great deal of not just egg. We're talking a wholesale omelet on their face here. I'm talking ostrich. I'm talking ostrich egg here.
Oh, jeez. Ostrich egg.
Macedonian dodo bird. Let's go for the big one.
Okay.
Yeah.
My.
Thank you. I think this one, my repertoire, I think it's going to go into the memoirs when I'll name names.
Name names and kick butt later.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes, indeed. I'm here to chew gum and kick you know what, then. I don't like bubble gum that much either, so there you go.
Running out of bubble gum. What was that? That was They Live, right?
Yes.
With Roddy Piper?
Roddy Piper. Yep.
Yeah.
And Kirstie Alley is also in that flick as well. Very good sci-fi movie.
Oh, yeah. She was real young in that.
Yeah, that was one of her first things.
No kidding. Mm. Who knew?
So, who knew? Who knew? But yeah, pranks. I love a good joke, but pranks, it's easy for them to get out of hand. And
yes.
You just can't tell how the other party will feel. You can pretty much tell a prank's going wrong when someone's running down the street after you with a Louisville slugger or a nine iron, you know. Screaming for to everybody else, and when you're just right there.
Yeah.
Someone takes a divot out of your head.
Have any of you ever tried golf?
Yes. I used to love playing golf.
I've been to the driving range. That's as far as it's gone for me, that miniature golf.
Well, I used to, when I was single, and even when I first got married, oh, my gosh, I used to play for like 54 holes a week. I'd go out with some friends or even sometimes by myself and shoot 9 or 18 holes. I got pretty decent. I played if I played all summer, I would get down to like maybe bogey golf, which is averaging one over
par. Wow.
Which actually, you know, for someone without any formal training is not too bad. But I had a terrible slice because of baseball. People
what
with baseball.
Slicing? Is that when you rip up half the green?
Slice is when you, especially on a long shot, like a drive, you hit the ball, and then it suddenly breaks real hard to the right. It's like a curve. It takes off straight, and it suddenly breaks hard to the right. It's because when you played a lot of baseball, you have a tendency to what they say, break your wrist, not literally break them, but you turn your wrists as you swing with a baseball bat. You're supposed to keep your wrist solid and stiff with a golf club. So when you break your wrist, you put a spin on the ball, and those little, you know, those little dimples on a golf ball, they catch a lot of wind. Yeah. And if they're spinning in the right fashion, they'll curve like crazy right off course. Yep.
Hmm. Well, what I know about it is how to address the ball. Hello, ball.
Yes, exactly.
Hello, ball.
Hello, ball. How you doing?
Yeah. But, yeah, I've gone online to see golf gone wrong where someone will hit the ball and the bird decides to intercept it. Where there was a golfer, I forgot the name of the golfer, and the ball went perfectly well, and people in the gantry, all of a sudden the ball went up a tree, came down, plopped right into a guy's pocket in his shorts. And you have to hit the ball. You have to hit it. Yeah. So, nicely, though, they allowed him to remove said ball since it was in a dangerous vicinity with other circular items. And
yikes!
Just dropped it. Yeah, drop it right there on the ground, and the referee.
Play it where it lies, buddy. Play it where it lies.
Everything I know about golf, I learned from the video Dorf Plays Golf.
Oh my gosh, Caddyshack.
Oh my gosh, Caddyshack was great. What a great film.
Yeah, the gopher. I'm reserving for the gopher. There you go. Oh, and Happy
Madison.
And
he made it.
And Happy Madison, that's another one. Go in your hole. Go in your hole. That's your home. Go in your hole. Go in there. That's your home.
Yeah. Well, big Adam Sandler fan, but I was happy to see Bob Barker beat him up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun. Bob Barker kicking butt on the golf course. Didn't he show up later to see Bob Barker in the hospital, and they ended up fighting in the hospital, too, or something ridiculous?
Oh, yeah.
I believe.
I never realized it, but how many movies are based on golf? I mean, I know Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy did a golf flick. It wasn't Adam's Rib. That
did
was
they?
Illegal. It was, yeah. But, yeah. She went on the, it was when she was wearing trousers. Oh, scandalous. Scandalous. Woman wearing trousers. Oh, my goodness. I'm getting the vapors. Scandalous.
Getting the vapors. Oh, God. There's an old expression.
I'm falling on my fainting couch, my fainting sofa.
I have the vapors. I always thought that meant something else, like something that would be vaporous.
I don't know where it came from. It might have come that when women got faint from wearing those corsets, whalebone or steel or whatever the heck they were wearing.
Iron. Ironmongery.
I know, they would burn a feather. They would actually burn a feather, and the burning of a feather had an ammonia-like smell that was akin to what we now know as smelling salts. And kind of wait for burnt feather. That's from reading The Scarlet Pimpernel. I told you I read too many books. It's also in the movie, but it's also in the book.
There's no such thing as reading too many books, in my opinion. If you can do it, if you have the time and you enjoy it, I say read.
You know, sometimes if I'm really ambitious, I can listen to a book online and read one at the same time.
Wow.
See what takes. See, I should have a PhD. You hear that, Yale? Yale and Vassar and Phoenix. University of Phoenix online. University of You Can Buy It Online.com. Yes, if you got that PhD for a nominal fee, you can have that PhD. Go into that operating room and show your degree. That's all right. Don't concern yourself. Brain surgery is very easy and can be done with many implements in the house.
Get an egg beater.
Oh, my.
There you go. A whisk.
Quickly. Spatula. Butter knife. Shrimp fork.
Oh.
Where's the shrimp fork? Oh, well.
Fancy.
Well, we don't need the shrimp fork anyway. It's somewhere in there. We'll find it later on. Okay.
Well, there's a very large and hairy fella who is demanding to go outside, so I think I had better.
Yes, I must be away as well. So,
hey, let that dog of yours hoots more than an owl does.
He's funny. He does that at night. He's tested to see if I'll wake up enough to wait, you know, let him outside to chase imaginary deer or something.
But that being said, actually, he's probably seeing spirits. He's seeing spirits wandering around the yard. Ooh.
He could, they say. I think cats are more likely to see him than dogs, but who knows.
The cats ignore him, so you don't know.
Yeah, they can coming right behind you, just like in The Shining or whatever, you know. Cat doesn't care.
And then it's dark.
No, it says, okay, I'll just get a new master next week, so that's what cat is saying.
Yeah.
You know? And there in the dark, you hear the creepy voice.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
There you go. And one other voice needs to come up, right, CW?
Oh, indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and with that, with your permission, gentlemen, I'll tap on the star on the door to Mr. Durante and say, Mr. Durante, the stage is yours once again.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and
ink-a-dink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.